You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm Charlotte Schmidt. I'm one of your co-hosts of this podcast. With me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan Riddell, guess what we're doing this week?
What are we doing?
Actually, you know, because we had to plan for this. But for those who weren't planning with us all week, we are doing a rewrite, and I am very excited because it seems like a long time since we've done a rewrite.
It does feel like it's been a long time since we've done a rewrite. And, you know, ever since our last rewrite, we've had more than a few, or maybe just a few people actually write in, tweet us, email us, everything like that, and say like, hey, do you mind if I write a script based off of your rewrite?
It's happened.
It's happened more than once, and it's a huge compliment to us. And I just think that's so great that somebody would actually take the time to take our idea and write about it, write a full-page teleplay. Because it takes time, it takes effort. And
absolutely,
to take our kernel of an idea and shape it in their own words, that's a huge compliment. So we thank you guys.
Oh, yeah, beyond words, if you will. Because it's just entirely, it blows my mind that people do take the time to do that. Actually go to the effort and actually complete the idea. Because if I were to do something like that, I would say, oh, yeah, that's such a great idea. I'm going to do it. I'm going to write it out. And then maybe a third of the way in, after I get done with day one, something else is going to grab my attention and I'm going to work on that. And then I might go back to it a little bit, but it would take me a long time to complete because lately my brain has not been in focus mode whatsoever. I've been trying to actually come up with a story for the Strange New Worlds contest, which, if you don't know, Pocket Books is reprising. They did a couple of these, I would call them anthologies. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, they did a couple of those in the late 90s. And what it is people, just regular old Joes like you and me, Star Trek fans who have a story idea, you submit a story and it's got to be in a certain word count. There are certain rules attached. And as long as you meet their guidelines, they consider it, put it under review, and then they publish the ones that they like the best. And I thought, you know what, while I'm job hunting, this would be a great way to delve into my creative energy and really put something out there and get back into writing hardcore. Well, guess what? I've written an outline and it sucked.
Yeah, I remember you texted me and said, hey, I did it, but it's lame.
Yeah, and I've not looked at it since. So that's how that's going, and that's kind of where my brain has been at lately, so we'll see if I manage to spit out a story. But anyway,
on my way here, when I should have been thinking about this rewrite, I was thinking about what I'm going to submit, because that's right, folks, both of your To the Journey hosts are going to try to submit something.
I'm glad you said try.
And like, I have no illusions whatsoever. I want to do it just for the sake of saying I did it, I submitted it, and so I could say, like, job well done, Tristan, you did it, but you're not doing it to win. And so that way I can judge the winners by saying, my stuff's better.
Yeah, my story was totally better.
That's what I was thinking on the long commute here. And I think when we take characters that we love, like, I am brand spanking new to fan fiction. That's what this is. This is a fan fiction contest. This is essentially a fan fiction contest. And
it is endorsed fan fiction. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've never done that before. And if you've ever listened to me on the Nerd Party or on To the Journey, you know that I'm a harsh critic when it comes to fan fiction and fan creations and everything
little
like
bit,
that.
Little bit.
And so even though you might think it's hypocritical of me to write a short story based on Star Trek, I am looking forward to it.
Well, cool. I look forward to hearing about your idea, because if and when, let's just say right now, when we finish our stories, we are going to exchange our ideas and review them and help each other make them better so that maybe we do win.
That's right. Char and I made a pact that if we submitted that we were going to go back and forth. And I was thinking about that, too, on the way here. I was just like, oh, man, like, like, I am so honest. Is she not going to like me after I send the email, like send the outline? And what if, like, what if she,
kidding?
Like, what if she's harsh on mine? Am I going to like harbor resentment towards Char?
Well, of course I'm going to be harsh because that's what real friends do. I'm going to tell you what I really think so that I help you improve you. And I would expect nothing less out of me. And I'm not going to think any less of you for it. In fact, that's what you have to do.
That's the beautiful thing of it. And also at the same time, like whenever I give notes, I tell people, I was like, hey, these are just my suggestions. Listen to me 100%, listen to me 0%, and I will harbor no resentment if you don't take my advice.
Right. Ultimately, it's your project. You do with it what you want.
Right.
But you ask for advice and you should get good advice.
Exactly.
Anyway. So speaking of writing, we're doing the rewrite, and the episode that we are rewriting this week is Nemesis. This is a season 4 episode, focuses on Chakotay, and why don't you give us a quick synopsis, if you would, please?
Sure. It's always helpful to have kind of a rundown. So with this one, it's how it reads on Memory Alpha is Chakotay is trapped on a planet where two species are fighting a genocidal war against each other. Well, it's a great deal more complicated than that. Chakotay mm-hmm. crashes yet another shuttle in this episode. This is from season 4, episode 4, first aired September 24th, 1997. This is actually the third shuttle in a row this season that was destroyed.
And this is early season 4.
This is early season 4. This is episode 4 of season 4, and it's the third shuttle destroyed.
No wonder they built the Delta Flyer.
And so what happens is he crash lands on this planet, and he's captured by these soldiers. These soldiers who sound like a middle school writing assignment where the thesaurus was abused. that's really all that I can describe it as.
I like that.
Where they have words that are kind of like that Enterprise episode where like a lie is called shale.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. Oh, that reminded me so much of this. Like, I was actually surprised that shale was not a word in the vocabulary of this. And then they just ripped it off again for Enterprise. It's like they stripped Darmok of all the elegance of the and then perverted the language and then turned it into this. And without getting too far ahead, I thought, is this really necessary?
What you're saying is exactly what I was thinking about when I was listening to this episode in my car. I wasn't watching it. I was listening. Okay. And
I would hope not. You should drive.
Right. Yeah. And I was actually thinking about that, about how this is like Darmok 101. Like Darmok and Tanagra is your advanced course in college, but you got to take this one in order to build up to Darmok.
So this is what? Maybe sixth grade? And I feel like that's even insulting sixth graders.
Like, so we can get back to it. Like, the kind of language that they're using is, like, instead of saying look, they say glimpse. Instead of saying enemy, they say nemesis. Instead of saying, instead of saying smarter, they say sharper. You know, it's things like that. And, like, and so instead of a mile, it's a footfall. And
right.
It's just, it's all these words that kind of show like, oh, they have kind of a different language. And so you have to interpret what they mean. So you have to think about it. But once you understand, they only use like 6 new words, but they use those over and over and over again. So once you understand that, you're like, oh, okay, now these soldiers just sound dumb. So anyway, these soldiers, they don't capture, well, they kind of capture Chakotay, but they bring him to the squad leader. And he's like, let him go. He's not the enemy. He's not the nemesis. Let him go. And Chakotay says, I got to go back to my ship. And they're like, okay, we'll help you try to get back to your ship. And they kind of develop a band of brothers type deal as they go through, and they teach him how to use their weapons to defend himself. And he keeps saying, he's like, no, you know, it's like, I'm not a part of your war. I'm just going to go to find my ship. And then the squad gets ambushed and Chakotay escapes and finds himself at a village. And the village is really nice to him, you know, like puts flowers around his neck and feeds him, gives him clothes and everything like that. And then they tell him, hey, there's totally a communication place, a 10,000 footfalls from here, but you should go at First Light or whatever they called it.
I think it was First Light. Yeah.
Was it First Light? Okay, I thought it was more obtuse than that. And then so he goes, and then as he's walking out, he sees a ship fly overhead. and shoot down photon torpedoes or some sort of weapon in the vicinity of the village. He runs back to the village. It's decimated. It's smoky. People are dead. And then he gets captured by the enemy and thrown into a cave. And there's this nice little girl who was sweet to him earlier. And they infer that bad things are going to happen to these people, like slavery and everything like that. And then Chakotay gets rescued by another soldier, and they call them defenders. That's another thing.
Yeah.
And after that, after he gets rescued, you start to realize that Chakotay is like falling deeper into this situation where his mind is just kind of like, he's not the same Chakotay. What we see at the beginning of the episode is Chakotay is like, it's okay. I'm Chakotay. I'm warm. I'm loving. It's okay to be afraid. If I was in your shoes, I'd be angry too. But then he slowly turns into, we're going to kill those guys. And he starts using the same kind of language.
Yeah, he himself becomes a soldier.
Right. And so he's like, I'm going to fight with you. Something that no Starfleet officer would ever do. And all of a sudden, they're in the thick of it. And one of those beasts that they call him, one of his nemesis, comes up and says, hey, Chakotay, it's me, Tuvok. And he's like, yeah, you're not Tuvok. You're a liar. And then all of a sudden he's like, no, I totally mean it. I'm totally Tuvok. Just look at my pointy ears. And then his face kind of dissolves from what Chakotay thought he was to the lovely Vulcan that we all know and love. And this is all part of another storyline that was going on the ship where Voyager was looking for Chakotay. They knew it was missing, and so they were trying to find help from the local government. And then it turns out the local government are actually the people that Chakotay is fighting.
The beasts.
That's the catch-22. That's the twist and everything like that. And they rescue Chakotay, and they show him that, none of this was real up until today. Everything was a training camp, a psychological training camp. And they prove it to him by taking him back to the village, and it's all fine. Everybody's alive, and it's the same kind of scenario that he had when he first got there, and that's when he realized everything was fake. And they used lots of drugs.
Yeah, and on top of that, psychological reprogramming is taking place, and that's what's converting him into this soldier thing.
Right.
Powerful stuff. You're messing with his mind, literally.
Messing with his mind, literally. And at the end, they had this really nice moment where he's in the sick bay, and the doctor's like, they filled you with so many drugs, I'm sure that they could have convinced you that your own mother was a turnip.
Yeah, that was a great line.
Yeah, one of the representatives from the opposition came in and said, Chakotay, I am so sorry that this happened to you. The guys are savages, and I hope that you can forgive us. Chakotay just is completely stunned. He's just enraged. His face starts to get red and he leaves, and Janeway chases after him and says, what's wrong? He says, I love this line. He said, it's kind of cheesy, but I love it. I don't care. He's like, I wish it was just as easy to stop hating as it was to start.
Such a good line. It is the best thing in this episode.
I used to make fun of this episode a lot. And I always last week we said that it was a marvelous, mediocre episode, but as I listened to it today, I don't think I gave it enough credit.
I have to agree with you, because I watched it over the weekend in preparation for this episode that we're recording, and thought, you know what, this is better than I remember it to be.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a lot better. It's a lot better than you remember it, and I actually remembering that a while ago.
Yeah, in fact, I think this, even though it's not so much about Chakotay himself, I mean, he is the main character. It's not like I don't want to say he goes undergoes a lot of growth, because ultimately this does not affect him very much in the long term, but it is a good Chakotay story.
It's a solid Chakotay story, and it makes me realize, well, I've always known this, but it makes me realize even further that Chakotay is a good man. He's a good man. When he's talking to those other soldiers and he says, he's trying to say, I understand your plight. It's okay. I was a freedom fighter myself, blah, blah, blah. And then there's that moment where's that soldier who's really nervous and green. And he says, I had the shakes and, I'm not a real soldier. And Chakotay's like, hey, buddy, it's okay. Fear is natural. Killing should not come easy. It's okay to have the shakes. I've had them. It's just like this entire time, I'm just like, damn, Chakotay, I just want to hang out with you.
Yes, although not in the barracks, if we can help that. I would much rather grab a drink with him in Sandrine's. Yeah, I just want to hang, though, and chill with Chakotay and gained some of his infinite wisdom.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. He's wise and warm, and I think he's a much-needed addition to the Voyager crew.
And we really should have learned so much more from him and with him than what we got. It's a shame. It really is.
I agree. But so now that we both said that we have a newfound appreciation for this episode, I bet a rewrite's going to be hard. What did you come up with?
Yeah, I found myself keeping a lot more than I initially thought I was going to. I thought I was going to completely tear this thing apart and rework the entire thing. Not so, because this is a really interesting perspective on war culture and what war does to people and all that. And especially in a post 9/11 world, we have people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan here in the US and around the world who are coming back from combat situations. And they've been through something like this.
Mm-hmm.
They've been through some shit, if you will. And there's a lot of potential to explore here. So one thing that I would do, though, is if we have to have the culture, the Vori, speaking in its own fashion when plenty of other alien cultures speak perfect English, I think you should explain it with one line, maybe a malfunctioning universal translator or something, okay, and make it a little more entertaining by maybe having a couple of misunderstandings. And that's how Chakotay figures it out. Like, the universal translator must not be working quite right because that's not what you meant. And that could lead to a couple of comedic things, because this is a very serious episode. It would be nice to maybe lighten it up on a very rare occasion, just a little bit.
I like that a lot. I think that's spot on. That was something that was missing.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily hate the idea that they wanted to give the language a little bit of a different spin or anything like that. It's not awful, but it just seems like it's thrown in there. So explain it. Make it a part of it instead of just putting it in and hoping it mixes with the other ingredients. I feel like about 15 minutes in, this episode does start to feel a little slow. And that's when they're having that talk about fear and going into battle and having the shakes. And I understand entirely why that's in there. It's a good conversation, but I feel like they're kind of trying to do Apocalypse Now on Voyager meets a primitive and perverted version of Darmok.
I'd say that's apt, yeah.
So, you know what? Let's just make it Apocalypse Now and go for the gung-ho guns in the jungle action and violence. So I think we cut out a scene like that so that we can make it more intense. I think the way you do this is you make it absolutely real. It's not a simulation. It actually happens. And so let's jump to the attack straightforward and make it more intense. So that to do that, to save time, they're going to approach the small village that Chakotay escaped to in the episode so that they can get a good night's sleep and get fed and they'll be welcomed with open arms. But the beasts have beaten them to it and set it ablaze. And Chakotay sees how innocent civilians are being slaughtered by people with far better technology than what the Vori have. Because the Vori seem pretty primitive overall. They know of technology, and they say later in the episode, we've been stripped of our technology. And so you could say that these other aliens are using their technology against them to just absolutely obliterate these people. And so Chakotay sees that the Vori are on the losing end of this by far and away. Like, they don't even have a chance. I want to really intensify that. So Chakotay sees that the young and the able survivors, like the girl that he befriends, they're being taken off, presumably to become prisoners. And then maybe between that and the death of his Vori comrade, say this happens all at the same time in the same battle, that's when Chakotay switches into kill mode. And it's much easier to show that. It makes it a little more interesting, and it still gets the points across that they're trying to do in the story. And then meanwhile, you keep everything on the Voyager side, which is very sparse anyway, except for Tom wanting to go down to the planet so bad. Why?
I was asking that same question. I was like, why is this a storyline? Like, why is this a plot point that, like, Tom is the one who is gung-ho? He's like, yeah, I want to do this. Like, send me down there. And then, like, when Tuvok comes up with a plan, he's like, okay, when am I going down? Let me go down. And why would the helm boy go down and not the head of security?
Presumably not to crash another shuttle, I guess. Maybe. And or it could be due to the fact that Chakotay saved Tom's butt in Caretaker, and maybe for whatever reason, 4 years later, Tom feels that he should repay that debt.
Maybe.
No, but no. Just send Tuvok and make it a little more straightforward. It makes a lot more sense. It was Tuvok's idea. Tuvok is the head of security. He's going into a combat situation. They know it's dangerous down there. Yeah you send him. Okay. Sorry, right. Tom. So things will progress along a lot more the same. Tuvok will capture Chakotay, but only after a much more intense fight. Tuvok's not going to talk him out of it or talk him into it. Tuvok and Chakotay are both going to get injured. Voyager will manage somehow to get them back. We'll figure that out later. We cut to them both in sickbay where Tuvok and Chakotay are resting, and maybe Janeway is talking with the doc about Chakotay's condition. That's where the doctor explains like he's undergone extreme neurological trauma in the brain, which can be likened to post-traumatic stress disorder from the fighting. And then also, yeah, the psychotropic drugs and all that that he's on, they're just this totally messed with him. And the doctor is about to continue, but he's interrupted by Chakotay, who wakes up in a state of panic, wondering where Karya, that girl, is. Because remember, he's left off seeing her being taken away to be a prisoner. So he's still, you know, in go mode. And he must find her, and he's got to find the rest of the soldiers and regroup and plan a new course, and they have to retrieve the prisoners. That's their new goal. We got to go. And Janeway interrupts him, and he finally comes to realize that he's back on Voyager. Like, oh, okay, I'm back here. It takes him a moment to snap back into what is now like a new reality. Mm-hmm. He's really confused. She explains that what he went through was all kind of like a reprogramming. He was basically just hallucinating. It was real, but he was still under the Vori technology, and it was neurologically interacting with him, and it's going to take days to deprogram him. And so he's off duty till further notice, and he's going to be going through some things. It's not going to happen very quickly, and it's probably going to hurt. No, despite the doctor's best efforts, it's just like doing it too fast would probably cause damage. It's like if you go off antidepressant medication, or really a lot of medications for that matter, and you do it cold turkey, that severely messes with you and you feel side effects. And so think of it kind of in the same way like that, except by a factor of 10.
Yeah.
And then I think you keep the scene where the beast is in sickbay, because Voyager has been negotiating with them all along, just like they were in the episode. And the beast guy apologizes to Chakotay for getting caught up in the crossfire, but instinct kicks in and Chakotay tackles him down.
Oh, okay. So you want a physical altercation.
Yeah, and it takes a moment for Janeway to insist that the beast is not there to hurt him, and it's the programming in his head, and you're on Voyager and you're safe. And Chakotay, again, he's like, oh my gosh, what just happened? I'm so sorry. But he does it very reluctantly, like, oh, wow. Okay, I hate you. I'm not supposed to hate you. You see it going in his head back and forth, like, oh my gosh, what has happened to me? He realized the impact of this experience, even though it was short-lived. But we want to show this impact. And Janeway kind of, you know, says to the beast guy, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. I'm just calling him the beast.
Yeah.
Says, okay, well, please meet with me outside. I'm really sorry. This is an understanding. He's still trying to recuperate and all that. So that way, we still have to have that moment, that line. Because when Chakotay finally regroups and he realizes what he's done, he says, I wish it was as easy to stop hating as it was to start. And so you got to keep that. It's so good. So that creates a little bit of room for what I would change in the episode. And that's what I want to see is a little bit more of the after effects, because this always gets skipped over. Combat really screws people up. Think about the lack of care that a lot of our vets get and what that has done and how much people have suffered as a result. Well, I want to see a poor Chakotay. I'm going to put him through the ringer here, but I want to even just see a little bit of what he's going through. And so I'm thinking the last maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes. It's a really long coda, but we've got to see it. And Chakotay is, like, maybe it's a first officer's log, where he says he's recovering from his experience with the Vori, but it's going to take some time. His neural pathways are gradually returning to normal, so says the doctor, but Chakotay says he's been permanently changed by his experience. And so what he's dealing with is what I think all soldiers have to deal with when they come back from war. Even though Starfleet still has a lot of regulation and whatnot, it's still very different from what he was going through. They're not quite in the same combat all the time readiness as he was on this planet with the Vori. Mm-hmm. Priorities, incredibly different, acclimating back to a world that isn't consumed by war, a lot of complications. So you go to Chakotay in the mess hall, and Neelix is pleasantly surprised to see him there because it's been a few days since you've seen him. And he exuberantly offers Chakotay a plate of breakfast, and a portion of it looks surprisingly similar to Vori rations that he ate on the planet. So it's like he's having a little bit of a flashback to show off the similarity. You know, and we see that visually. We'll see a flashback to really make the connection and make that clear. And so Neelix asks him, hey, is anything wrong? And Chakotay, he looks up and no, he's fine. He takes a seat. He takes a bite of the food that looks like the Vori rations, even though it, and it even reminds him like of how the Vori rations taste. And we can tell by his expression, followed to another flashback of him eating the rations and all that. A color in Neelix's clothing, maybe he's got a new uniform or something, gives him another flashback to, say, the Vori uniforms or something. Everything is reminding him of being back on that planet right now. He starts having muddled visions of the mess hall looking, like, jungle-like, and it's just... And then he's got a snap back, too, when Tom Paris and Harry Kim join him at the table in the mess hall and say, hey, Chakotay, long time no see. How are you doing? Chakotay kind of lies, you know, just, yeah, I'm hanging in there. I'm all right. You would think Tom and Harry might be a little more understanding of this, but they're going to just jump into something kind of fun and say, hey, did you know that Samantha Wildman's daughter, who is at this point unnamed in the series, just learned how to read? And has he heard about that since he's kind of been out of commission? And again, this is relating the whole thing of different priorities. Mm-hmm. This sounds downright superficial compared to your life being on the line, on the ground.
Right.
And while he's like, while they're saying this, he thinks about Karya and mistakes Samantha Wildman's daughter for Karya. And so he kind of snaps again. Is she safe? And there's a pause. Everybody processes what happened. And then Chakotay's like, ah, I'm sorry. As he snaps back and they say, okay, we know that you've been through a lot. And then I think the closing line has to be something like, it didn't take long to adapt to war, but it's going to be much longer before my mind adapts out of it. Kind of a mm-hmm. reflection of the whole hating and starting, stopping. And we end basically with just Chakotay is going to have a long road ahead of him. Of course, I would want to continue this in future episodes. And in fact, I would like to, in a future episode, introduce the boxing element where... He has some leftover aggression from this war, this experience, mm-hmm. and he uses that to channel that energy into something productive and good. But for 1 hour, we can't go that far. I feel like this is enough right here, and I hope I didn't water down the coda too much with this, but I feel like it's really important to show the aftermath. So there's got to be a way we do that.
Aftermath is important, and I understand that they can't go too in-depth. Like, with this episode, how it was written, not your rewrite, but how Nemesis was originally written, I understand that they have to go into knowing, like, okay, we can't spend all day on this. We can't spend multiple episodes on this. And so,
yeah.
But I did like that it wasn't just, oh, the doc gave him a hypo spray and Chakotay's like, da-da-da-da-da, that was messed up, but I'm going to go back to my duties and everything like that. I was glad that they left it with you knowing he's not okay yet, but he will
True.
Be.
Absolutely. So that, in essence, is kind of my rewrite idea. I basically just had that scene at the end that I was thinking of to show the aftermath. That's my big portion of the rewrite. Mm-hmm. Besides speeding up the rest of it, just so I can make room for that. But now I really want to know what you've got, because I've been talking for a long time and I'm sick of hearing my own voice.
Well, with me... Mine is a little bit different. I really enjoyed your rewrite because
I felt
like you tweaked it, like you just amplified it. You took out the stuff you didn't like and you amped it up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was a mixture of Nemesis and the episode of Deep Space Nine where Miles is a prisoner for 20 years in his brain.
Oh, you're right. Yes, there are elements of that.
I feel like you combine the best elements of both episodes and put it into one. And I think that's a great episode.
Boom. Oh, thanks.
With mine, okay, so I love framing devices, and I probably rely on them a bit too much. So the opening of my episode is Chakotay chained to a chair, and he's not being tortured. You know, he's not, because we've seen Chakotay go through that before.
Really, enough is enough. Leave the poor guy alone.
Yeah, he's not being tortured. He's just being interrogated. It's in a very stark room. Okay, it's very, like, aluminum panel and aluminum table, and he's chained to the chair, and there's two other chairs opposite him. And that's all that we know. And so he's struggling, he's angry, he's trying to get out, and two of the beasts, okay, two of the Nausicaan-type people walk in. One goes, he's like, okay, well, can I start? And the other said, well, yeah, you should do it now before it wears off. Is now really the best time? He's like, yeah, you need to ease him into this. Otherwise, nothing will happen. And so we're like, okay. And so the guy, one leaves and one sits down. And he's like, listen, we're not the people you think we are. We are just trying to help you. We're just trying to figure out what happened. And we just need you to tell us what happened. Tell us what you went through. You know, start from the beginning. And Chakotay is using, you know, like this weird kind of language. You know, like he has the glimpses and the footfalls and everything like that, but it's nowhere near as much. You know, it's just like a drop of it here and there. And Chakotay is incredibly agitated, and he's not really himself, and he's just spewing hatred at this person, saying, "You're the reason my friends are dead. You know, like you're the reason why I can't go home." And so we have no idea what he's talking about. Is he talking about the Voyager crew? Is he talking about, you know, somebody we don't know? And why is he so angry at this person? And why is he not acting like Chakotay? And then that's when we have the... And, you know, so that's your opening. And then we come back to him and he's strapped in the chair. The beast says, listen, this is for your own good, okay? Like, just you need to start from the beginning. And he's finally able to convince Chakotay to start from the beginning. He's like, fine, you want to know how you killed my friends? Like, you want to know from my perspective? I'll tell you exactly how evil I think you are. And then we go to the beginning where he's crash landed. And it starts very much like the other one. But instead of him being picked up by soldiers, he walks and he hears fighting all around him. He's walking through the woods and he hears fighting. He sees ships go overhead and he tries to hide from the fighting because he has no idea, you know, like what's waiting for him on the other side. He has no idea if it's friend or foe or both or either, okay, whatever. And then he comes across this village. It's not just like the village, but it's a little bit, the village is a little bit more populated than what we saw in the episode. And it's all women and children and old men. You know, like no one between the ages of 18 and 50.
Okay.
And they're taking care of themselves, you know, like they're just like, yeah, like our men are at war, you know, like you're more than welcome to rest here. He's like, I really need your help. I need to find my ship. Can you help? Like, and they say, you know, like we don't have any communication equipment, you know, like we don't have any technology. So times are hard right now. You know, like we need some help. And he said, he's like, yeah, but is there anything that you can do for me? They're like, well, we can take you to a station, but we need your help so bad that we will take you in the morning if you help us today. And so he is going all around the village and he's basically the handyman. They're so desperate for help. I mean, they're taking care of themselves. They just need as much help as they can get. And so he's fixing roofs, you know, he's digging holes, he's helping out with everybody else who's digging holes, you know, and everything like that. Just your average Star Trek work out in the fields work, you know, like that they show, you know, like manual labor.
Yeah.
You know, planting and everything like that, farming. And so he develops relationships with his people, you know, like he has the same kind of conversations that they had before where, you know, like, oh, tell me about your nemesis. What did they do to you? And, you know, and everything like that. So everybody has a horror story. It affects Chakotay on a very personal level where it's very reminiscent of his time fighting the Cardassians, where they're like, you're like, oh, our government made a treaty and we had to leave our homes. And, you know, it's like it's eerily similar to what he went through.
Okay.
And what his people went through and why he joined the Marquis. Before the morning comes, soldiers come at nighttime, but they're soldiers and they're good soldiers as far as he knows. They're like, okay, you know, like, hey, Chakotay, you are, you know, you're of the right age. You seem pretty smart. You're able. How about you help us with our cause? And he says, he's like, no, I can't. I'm a Starfleet officer. Prime directive dictates that I cannot take sides in a fight. They try to convince him. They're like, listen, you may not be here tomorrow. We may not be here tomorrow. But today the threat is real. So why don't you help us? And he just continues to say, he's like, you know what? I'm really sorry. And they try to lay on a guilt trip for him. And they're like, fine, we're going to leave at first light. He's like, so am I. They go east. He goes west with a representative from the village. The same thing happens. You know, the attack happens. They see the ship fly overhead and they rush back. And it's just completely decimated. And we see some really, really twisted stuff. I'm trying to find a balance for, like, it's network TV and it's also Star Trek, so you don't want to get too weird.
Yeah, how do you mean weird?
Well, like, people, like, dead bodies hanging from trees.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, stuff like that, you know, like where it, they weren't just shot and left to die, their bodies were mutilated and hanged from somewhere after post-mortem, you know, it shows an enemy who delights in killing, not just eradication.
Gives me the vision of Star Trek 2.
Yes, that kind of stuff, you know, like where it's just like, oh, this is messed up. Why is this here? You know, and we've seen it all the time in sci-fi. So we see something like this. So it's pretty gritty. And then as soon as Chakotay and that emissary gets back, the emissary just has no idea what to do. It's just, and he says, he's like, this is basically the third village that I've been a part of where this has happened. And then the soldiers come back. They're like, listen, are you going to join us now? You know, are you going to help us out now? You know, while this is going on, while this story is going on, we're going back and forth between this and the interrogation room.
Okay.
When we go back to the interrogation room, the room is different. It's not stark aluminum anymore. Those, all of a sudden, there's lights on the side.
Oh, boy. Are there four lights?
No, it's nothing like that. Nothing like that.
Okay.
I can understand why you would think that. But no, it's there's lights on the side. There's blinking lights. And you could have sworn as a viewer that those weren't there before. And then we go back to it, and they try to convince Chakotay, and Chakotay keeps putting up a fight. And they say, you got to help us out, and we'll take you. Like if we take you to your to the communication and talk to your ship, will you help us at least along the way? You know, like if we get into a firefight,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, will you at least stand your own? And he says, he's like, okay, you know, in exchange for you taking me there, yes, I will. And so they go, they just get decimated. They just get absolutely decimated. All of these connections that he makes with these people, all these friendships that he makes, they're just completely amplified. And we see Chakotay get more and more unhinged, where he just can't handle it, where he's hearing explosions go off around him. He sees people dying and he just can't handle it. And then the guy who kept trying to convince him, like he's about to die, and Chakotay picks him up and then, you know, goes off into the woods deeper and escapes from everything. Then we go back to the interrogation room. There's stuff on the desk. So the room has changed again.
Okay.
And this time the audience knows, okay, all right. Like, something's up. This is not just my imagination. This is real. The room is changing. Then we go back to him. He's in the woods. He's with his dying friend, now friend. And the guy tells him, he's like, okay, well, if you're not going to fight for us, at least make it so that my death is not meaningless. We were on our way to do X, whether it's destroy.
I'm sorry, I had a vision. We're gonna do X. They're gonna go like do ecstasy.
Yes, they're gonna have a rave, you know, later on. No, they're gonna do
awesome.
They're gonna do X. It's whatever, like insert writing tool. You know, like it's destroy that bunker, assassinate that guy. You know, take that hill. You know, it's whatever you can imagine. And they're like, please do this for me. We're with Chakotay in this 42-minute journey. He actually says yes, and we're like, what is wrong with this guy? Like, Chakotay, like, I know some of your friends has died, but you can't blow up that bunker. You can't assassinate that person. You can't take that hill.
Mm-hmm. And it's unlike him to want to do something like that.
Exactly. And so, like, we see this tonal shift happen where just something snaps. And the guy says, he's like, listen, it'll be easier for you. You're an alien. They won't be looking for your life signs. You're one person, they'll be looking for a squadron. It'll be easier this way. We see the hill, we see the bunker, whatever it is. Like, he starts to go forward, and then, but he trips a signal, and he gets trapped. And like you think he's about to do it. Like he's about to throw that grenade. He's about to shoot that bullet. And right before he does, like he's going to pull the metaphorical and literal trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Right when that happens, he gets, you know, trapped in like an Ewok trap type deal.
Okay.
And then we go back to the interrogation room and he says, he's like, and that's where we are. This is, you know, like the rest, you know. You guys killed, you eradicated that village. You killed my friends. God knows what you've done with my crewmates. You know, the Nausicaan looking person is like, Chakotay, don't you understand? Don't you see? We're your crewmates. We're your family. And then as soon as this person says family, the room starts to melt away. The face starts to melt away. And we realize that we're in sickbay.
Okay.
Chakotay's in a chair. And then we see Doc in the corner. He's like, okay. He's like, the drugs have taken effect. They've cleared his system. And it looks like we've eased him into it. So, like, there shouldn't be any too much damage to his cerebral cortex or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that kind of like that moment that we had on the surface where, you know, Tuvok looks like the Beast. You know, like, he's in front of Chakotay and he looks like the Beast. And he's like, hey, it's me. But I just wanted to ramp that up to the nth degree where the whole time it was actually, I don't know who it was. I don't know if it's going to be Janeway or Tuvok. It's maybe Tuvok. And it was Tuvok and not interrogating him, but just questioning him, trying to bring him back. And the doctor was monitoring the whole time. And then we kind of end the same way where they say like, yeah, they screwed you up. None of that was real. You know, like, this is what was real. They put drugs in your system. You would never do this in a million years. And they conscripted you in order for this one mission.
Mm-hmm.
Because they needed an alien to do it.
Luck of the draw, just like Janeway said, you just happened to be there.
Exactly, just complete luck of the draw. He crash landed and they're like, hey, fantastic, we have an alien, let's do it. And then, like, you know, the ambassador comes on board, he says the whole thing, and then he leaves, and that's it, end of episode.
That is a fantastic way to use almost all of the same elements that episode had, but just to make it a little more powerful. I really like the way that you have the twist at the end revealing that the interrogation room, if you will, is really sickbay.
Mm-hmm.
And that the interrogator is really Tuvok. That's cool. But explain one thing to me. Why do elements of the room change as the episode goes on? Why are things different? What's with that?
The drugs are slowly wearing off.
Oh.
Like at the beginning of the episode, he's like, okay, the drugs should wear off soon, so you should start now. And he says, he's like, shouldn't I just wait? You know, like, or should I do it? Or is now the right time? He's like, yeah, you need to ease him into this before the drugs take full effect.
Okay. And that would be kind of interesting to use really, really nondescript Starfleet items that you would see around sickbay.
Right.
Just ever so slowly making their way in there. You may or may not notice the first time around.
Yeah, it'd be like the curve of the table, a light that's not an Akutagram, you know, a chair that you've seen a million times before, but is not something that you wouldn't immediately recognize, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Oh, that makes the rewatchability factor so much higher, where you're going to watch that 10 times just to get the gist of every little thing that they did, because we're nerds and we're going to do that.
Right. Absolutely.
Ooh, I like your episode so much better than what I came up with. I mean, it's real story structure. I struggled with that on mine, I think, just a tiny bit because of the message I wanted to get out. And maybe I'm trying to do too much with what I did. But you just took a small, subtle shift, reframed it, and gave it bookends and made it way better, much more powerful.
Well, thank you very much. That's what I was going for, because I didn't like, because I appreciated the episode a great deal. And so I didn't change too much. But the thing is, I mean, like, give yourself more credit, because you actually made changes to it. You took out the stuff that didn't work and made it better. I just kind of amped it. Like, you actually rewrote and reworked and made it better. So I think we took it from two different angles, which hopefully was enjoyable for the listener.
Hopefully. I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed it, so I hope they did too. But rewriting Nemesis is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I don't know if I'd watch it again, but if you haven't seen it, I would suggest you... I mean, you kind of have to. Like you said to me, you kind of have to. If you're going to be an original series fan, you got to watch all the original series crew doing stuff.
The Ready Room.
Here's one more thing I want to throw out here for you guys. Recasting this episode, because I know you guys like to do this on To the Journey with things, with series and such. I think that Ma'ab should be played by Will Ferrell.
To the Journey!
Bravo to the holodeck.
Bravo to the holodeck. Bravo to science!
Yes, for coming to the truth.
Commentary, Trek stars.
If they came out and they were like, Damon Lindelof is working on the show, it would be like jets and sharks in the streets.
That heart on Twitter would burst into flames like it was being held by Molaram or something, you know?
The 602 Club.
So what we have here is an origin trilogy. And I think that's what's so brilliant about Skyfall, is that by the time you get to the end of Skyfall, you have put Bond back exactly where he belongs, but you've also made him new and modern. And it's an incredible trick to pull off.
Literary Treks.
It definitely starts in a very dark place, and it doesn't get much brighter at all, you know, until we get to the end, and you know, there's some hope there. But yeah, definitely, it's a dark book.
Women at Warp.
Basically, they're overturned by Riker being sexy.
Well, to be fair, Riker's sexiness has been used to save the day on numerous occasions.
Meta Trex.
That would have just been a grand moment if, you know, George Takei would have played Tuvix, you know, and when the transporter accident happens, he's standing there in those colorful clothes and just says, oh my.
Oh my.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all 20 plus of our shows. We are everywhere. We talk all kinds of things Trek. So if you're a TTJ listener and haven't checked out the rest of the network, well, go and do that. Go onto the Trek.fm website or go onto iTunes and take a look at what else we have to offer. We've got something for everybody. And speaking of iTunes, somebody tweeted at us. He goes by DJ Shea. I hope I'm saying that right. And I think it's a guy. I'm sorry if you're a girl. I should not assume, just by DJ. This person gave us a 5-star rating, wrote us a lovely review, and let us know that he did it in the Canadian iTunes store. So thank you very much for doing that. If you're a non-US resident who has left us a review in your country's iTunes store, please let us know, and we will also give you a shout out on the show. And then thanks also to those of you who rate us in the US, and we will cover those of you who have recently reviewed us next week. So before we go, one more order of business, and that, of course, is Patreon, because Trek.fm is a listener-supported network. Go to patreon.com/trekfm and check out all the perks that we have in store for you. We have actually recently reworked what you get at different levels of contribution, and we are going to add more patron roundtables to the mix because of those changes. And so if you want to get in on this action, now is a really good time. And you can come talk Trek with all the other patrons who participate in the roundtable, as well as hosts, various voices around the network, and it's a very good time. Plus, the end result goes into the master feed, so you can hear yourself in a podcast. How about that? For TTJ, we especially need to thank Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Aaron Harvey, and Bruce Lish. They are associate producers of this show, and we thank them greatly for supporting us in particular, but also Trek FM at large. Now, that said, we get to focus on to next week, and what are we going to do?
Next week, we're doing something that we haven't done for a little bit, but it's make a list of the top 5 moments for couples, and it's not always romantic couples, it's mainly pairings. It can be romantic, but it can also be non-romantic, and this is one of my favorite non-romantic pairings on Star Trek Voyager, and that is our top 5 favorite character moments between Tuvok and Neelix.
Yes, this should be a lot of fun. These two had a lot of jabs at each other back and forth throughout the series. I think we're going to have some fun stuff to work with, and hopefully it's a fun show. But guess what? You got to wait until next week. So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!